The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Welcome back to another Mission Minded. Keep your mind, your mission on your mind. He's the CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. It sounds like I've said that a few times. It's because I've been doing it for over two, three years. We love doing the show together. Michael Coleman, a brother of mine, a brother from a different mother, and we're good buddies and love doing the show with you every week and talking about business. And, of course, we also do a show called Bite by Bite, which airs right after this on the Tony Curry Radio Network podcast. You can hear that show right after this. They run at least five times a week on the TKR app. Get that app. It's free. Plays classic rock during weekends, shows during the day. It's fantastic. You'll love it. And then we'll get after it with Bite, Bite, Bite. A lot of interesting news going on this past week that a lot of people don't look at from a business standpoint, but certainly anything that happens historically when you're talking about countries getting along has something to do with the economy. Whenever a country shuts down, it affects all of us. And I think a lot of people saw that with Ukraine going, oh, wait a minute, we get our what from Ukraine? You know, we all think we're all self-sufficient. We produce more oil here than anywhere else in the world. We do now. And people are like, well, why should a war over there have to do with our oil consumption here? It does. I didn't realize how much grain came out of the Ukraine. And not so much us, but third world countries who need those ships of grain to go out every single hour, every single day. And so you wanted to talk about Donald Trump, Vladimir Putin, and of course, Zelensky. We can certainly throw him in. It looks like he's going to be part of another meeting. I'd be loved to be able to fly on the wall in that meeting. First of all, let me ask you this. Does Vladimir Zelensky, does he shake Putin's hand?
Wait a minute. You talking about Trump and Putin, or are you talking about Zelensky when they meet?
Zelensky. I know Putin's going to shake his hand. He'll hug his ass.
He'll give him a reach around.
But do they shake hands? And there's a reason why I'm asking. Would you shake Putin's hand? Would you shake Putin's hand?
That would be very difficult if I felt like somebody had invaded my country and killed killed my countrymen and been fighting with him for 3 years and had 3.5 years fighting him off. Wow. It would be very difficult to do that, but
would it be the right thing? Would it be the right thing to do? And I know a lot of people are like, I can't believe he's shaking hands. He's killed our babies. I get that. But we're also trying to get a ceasefire here. We're trying to start something new. I'm assuming they have not spoken or seen each other face to face in a long period of time. And so just to show I'll do whatever it takes for my people, if it means shaking your hand. Now, I don't know if he's even going to extend his hand. I don't know what's going to happen. Yeah.
My guess is they're going to, that's what their aides are going to talk about and say what the intent is, what the not intent is. Cause they'll do photo ops. It does though, kind of address and tap into the whole thing about Trump receiving this criticism about meeting with Putin, but not bringing Zelensky in. And I will tell you, Trump has not really addressed that specifically. You know, he's gotten a lot of criticism for it. And of course, you hear a lot of, well, he doesn't have the right to negotiate those issues for Zelensky or Ukraine and all that. And I really don't think that's what Trump's doing. I think Trump understands that Zelensky's ready to make a deal. Doesn't want to give up land, but he's kind of lobbed it out there. Hey, you may have to give up the Donetsk region and some of the others. But I think the reason he wants to meet with Putin first is can you imagine if you were moderating between Zelensky and then you get the personal animus and the resentment and the hatred and all of that? It really interferes with getting a good discussion off the ground. And Trump, I think, is using a lot of wisdom in this, in that he says, I'm going to talk with Putin and in a very one-on-one kind of bro way is really get to the heart of what is important to him, what he is willing to compromise on, not willing to compromise on, but try to get a feel for, is he serious at all? Because without somebody else chirping in on that, I don't think he's going there to make a deal. I think he's in there going to try to say, look, you have to come to the table. We have to have a serious talk, a serious agreement. And if you don't, I'm going to come out and just smash you as hard as I can with sanctions and countries associated with you. Like, we really hit India very hard. Mm-hmm. The Indian prime minister, I guess, came over, you know, and had a very friendly discussion, and they were like agreeing on tariffs and all that. And then Trump goes back and smacks them with like 50% tariffs. Why? Because they were buying Russian oil.
Yeah.
And so when people may side with Russia because of their own economic interests, not because they're making a moral argument, but the sledgehammer that Trump has shown is, look, I'm going to punish you if you choose that. So you may not, I'm not asking you to like the United States more than you like Russia. What I'm telling you is, we're the world's largest economy by far, and we're going to hammer you so hard that we're going to make, if you still choose Russia, we're going to make it painful for you. And not that that's going to influence everybody, but a lot of countries are going to go, all right. And so he's choking Russia's oil output, because right now the only way that Russia is able to wage this war is to sell oil. Mm-hmm. And they have a lot to sell. And what they're doing is they're feeding the Chinese market. Now, a lot of people go, well, that's okay. America has enough oil to do it, to provide for itself. While that is true, what people lose track of, I'm certainly not an expert in this, but I know that oil output, it all goes on a world market. So you have world supply, world demand. It doesn't say, okay, America, like, we still import, even though we make more oil than we make, so we export oil, import. I mean, it's kind of these global ties. Mm-hmm. And everybody needs it. And now we've kind of passed the EV revolution. You know, a lot of car companies are going back on their promise to go EV because, you know, it's kind of like the whole woke thing. Everything got caught up in that. Everything was going to be electric, windmills and all that. And now we've kind of pushed past that and kind of back. And whether that's good or bad, I'll leave it up to the individual to decide. But from a big picture, you know, it affects things like oil prices. And so I think Trump, one of his strengths is he knows we have a hammer like nobody else. And he wants to use that, because I do think he wants to shut down the war. People thought, okay, you've got Russia. Russia's our enemy. I don't know how close we are with Ukraine. They're going to war. Why do we matter? Well, it affects commodity, but it affects, you know, inflation. We talked about inflation. We've talked about the problems with it, the burden that it puts on American households with people trying to make ends meet. And the two greatest increases over the last, you know, few years have been food prices, which are tied into agriculture, and energy prices, mm-hmm. which are tied into the price of oil. And so this instability across the market and this whole battle about Russia financing it through oil and selling it to China and other countries, all of that affects the world supply and the world pricing. I didn't know until the war broke out is how much how much wheat and grains were exported by yep. Ukraine. And then you can even tie that in also just to the Black Sea and the shipping that's been, you know. And so anytime we think back during COVID when our supply chains, I'd tell you, and I'll give you an example just from the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. I came here as COVID was, we were coming out of COVID in June of 2022. We had originally priced, before I got here, they had priced the freezer that we added. It's a building by itself, but it's just connected to our warehouses. It was 8,000 square foot freezer, and it was priced at just under $1 million to build. By the time we got done, it was $1.8 million wow. in total cost. So almost doubled. And a lot of that was because the supply chain was so interrupted. We went months backlogging on a back delay to get the parts that we needed. And when it came, and it's just like, hey, there's huge demand, but no supply. So they were taking advantage, you know, the prices got jacked up, labor, I mean, everything went crazy. So that was COVID. Then you throw in a war that creates instability across farming and exports and sea travel, all those kind of things continues to put upward pressure on things and hinder our recovery, at least to some degree. And so I do think we take an interest in it, not to mention just from a humanity point of view. Yeah. And that's really on both sides. I mean, when I think about the number of the hundreds of thousands of Russian soldiers, I mean, I don't know what it is lately, but for a long time, more than 1,000, they were averaging more than 1,000 deaths a day. And Russian soldiers, I mean, conscripts getting drafted in, getting sent right to the front lines, getting what, I mean, they were just, it was just feeding them. To the Ukrainians. And then there's Ukraine's, oh, again, have a more noble cause of defending their territory. But let me tell you something. This is not at all justified. They were not justified, in my opinion. But I have, there is a lot of corruption. And Zelensky was involved in kind of overthrowing the previous regime, whether that was right or wrong. You could go back and debate it. And if you go far enough back in history, Ukraine did belong to Russia. Mm-hmm. Now, that's what he's trying to claim, is this is our territory that was taken away a long time ago. So I'm certainly no Russian sympathizer. They could make a historical argument, I guess, that, and we already know that there's a lot of corruption in Ukraine. But the bottom line is, their people creating God's image. There's a lot of suffering that's taking place. And nobody knows Trump's heart for sure, but what he proclaims is, hey, I'm trying to stop wars because it just creates human suffering along with economic pain and instability across the planet.
You served in our armed forces, and we thank you for that. I keep hearing this is a war of attrition. I know what that means. The fact that Ukraine, and granted, they've needed a lot of help. So for people to sit there and say Donald Trump should keep his nose out of their business, no. We've sent them trillions of dollars worth of arms. This is our war now, okay? And, yeah. And this is the Europeans' war. Ukraine would have been wiped off the face of the earth without us. And so we've got a say in this, right? Whether Zelensky's part of it or not, the reason they're not there is there's probably nothing that could be said between the two of them. We need a mediator. That's why you have mediators. And when you get through divorces, right, that's why you have a judge, because you can't even talk to each other. You hate each other so much. You don't even talk to each other. You need someone to sit down and do that. And that's why I think Donald Trump's trying to do that. I do think it's funny though, that we obviously have enough military and enough weapons to kill everyone on the face of the earth 8 times over. Yet we get this 2-3 year thing that just does not seem to want to end. That goes on for the Israel war too.
Yeah.
And because we know we have the military to wipe out a country in a heartbeat. And I get it. And I don't want to see that happen ever. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But it just seems really, it just seems really strange to me that what we're doing is we're playing defense. We're playing a basketball game where the last person standing wins, but we're not hitting each other. And we're just standing there for months and years and years and years and years until finally someone's just so damn tired they just can't take it anymore. And they finally say, you can have it. Now, I'm not saying that we haven't talked and taken a lot of life. And I'm not saying people haven't lost their life and it's in vain by no imagination. I'm just saying that if you wanted to go in there and win this thing, Russia could do that, I would think. At least I would think they could. If they wanted to if they wanted to win by tomorrow, they could win by tomorrow and take Ukraine over. Now, I don't know what would happen after that. I don't know how the rest of the world would consider. So we get this thing where we're just bombing the same shit over and over and over again.
Well, let me tell you, Russia has always positioned themselves as being this great and dynamic army, and lots of nations would invest in U.S. manufactured weapons, or let's just say Western. You know, it could be from France, it could be from Germany, it could be from the UK. And then some by Russian systems, like Iran had Russian air defense and all of those kind of things. I remember going back because I was in Desert Shield, Desert Storm, and all we kept hearing about was that Iraq had the fourth largest army. And if you've never been in a battle, that can be intimidating. And there were times where we were just expecting them to come rolling over the hill. But let me tell you how ridiculous it is when the technological advantages. So imagine this. Most of their tanks in Iraq, and this was, again, 30 years ago, 35 years ago now, 44 years ago. Anyway, their tanks back then, the majority of them were T-70s. The best they could do, imagine a tank going at a certain speed and then seeing a target. It would have to stop, come to a complete stop, turn, and it probably could roll at maybe 30 to 35 miles an hour open. But then it would have to come to a complete stop. The turret would have to slowly turn to the target. And this was some of the best they had at the time, as opposed to M1 tanks. We could be going 60 miles an hour, turn our turrets and shoot on the run.
Yeah.
And nail you better than a field goal kicker is going to kick a ball through the uprights, more percentage. So it really didn't matter how many tanks and how many people they had. Every aspect of our military was so superior. And we saw that kind of when the Iraq war ended, when they were coming back and we just had Apache pilots just target practicing out there on the tanks and just destroying them on that highway. Now, what you see in the Russian army is I think they have been throwing the best they have out. I think what you see is anytime American weapons are given to Ukraine, they're such a force multiplier because they can do things that the Russians have no defense against. So they've been able to kill, let's just say, half a million, more than we lost collectively in World War II. Mm-hmm. They've already wiped out it in these 3 years. It's just been a bloodbath. Now, and not all with America. I mean, they basically haven't had any technological advantage to maybe you get into the drones and stuff like that. But our weapon system is so superior. The only reason Russia couldn't be taken over is just because of the threat of nuclear. And that's what they always fall back to. Because the truth of the matter is, I feel like we could go in and wipe Russia off. And I think right now we have that same technological advantage with China. Now, one more thing about that. I remember one time, I'm really going to date myself now. You remember the old show Phil Donahue?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Phil Donahue came out right before Oprah came out. And that was when talk shows were he was the king of that daytime talk show. And he was no fan of America. He was very left and very anti. But for one time, he got all the so this back when the Soviet Union was there. And there was an episode and he had a chart that showed all the different Russian. There was 15 Soviet Union submarine types. And then he holds up America. America had one. And everybody's like, oh, no, I'm just generating fear and everything else. And this sailor calls in and he goes, before everybody gets in a panic, the only thing that matters when you're under the water is not being detected. And every one of those are pretty easily detectable up to 15. They have more of them, but the difference is they can't hear us for the most part, and we can hear them.
Yeah.
So it just spoke to the idea that, yeah, that creates fear. Like, oh no, we're going to be destroyed. We don't have any seafaring capability. And it's when you look at our ships, when you look at our technology, we are just light years ahead of them, that we can reach out and touch them. Last quick story I'll tell you about this. One of the things that our Apaches can do, to just give you, and this was 20 years ago, so it's probably so much more advanced. Mm-hmm. You could have an Apache and had a little ball on top, which was like, so imagine Apache being behind a ridge, so you can't see it and you can't hear it from that far away. It could go up and it could take a picture of the landscape, pick all its targets, but it could just go up and show itself for just a second and drop back down. So nobody has time to shoot it or anything else. It can pick all its targets from the picture it captured. Wow. Pick back up and shoot and then go away. It wouldn't even be in the area when the target's ready. Wow. So if they didn't see and know it, they wouldn't. So the whole point is that was 20 years ago. Now, the one sector that has really benefited from this is our defense sector. And I will tell you this, even though, again, I'm very patriotic and very pro-American. If you go back to the Eisenhower administration, one of the last things he said was, be very leery of the defense, this behemoth that is the defense industry. Why? Because they need money, and to get money, they need to produce weapons, and to produce weapons, there needs to be war.
Yeah.
So they come up with every reason in the world to go to war. And when you've got those people talking your ear and talking about this kind of capability. So right now, our defense industry has been golden because they're selling, the government's buying these missiles and tank killers and all this stuff, Javelin missiles. They're doing very well. And it's not in their national interest to stop this war.
Yeah.
So you have some real power brokers on that side. And so I just think it's to kind of throw off the other side. They don't always do what's in the best interest of humanity or the best interest of peace, because it works against their financial interests.
Do you think it's been talked about to assassinate Putin?
Oh, no doubt.
And why don't you think that's happened?
I would say it, well, first of all, that's probably difficult for our, special ops, to be able to get access to him. I guarantee you there's the CIA has discussed that this idea that we don't assassinate. Yeah. That's our official policy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's complete bullshit that over the years we have not assassinated leaders. If we thought they were a threat to us. But one more thing about that, I think we learned a lesson. If you go back, remember when all this, they had dictators for years, Saddam was one, you had the terrible dictator in Syria, you had the one in Egypt, Mubarak, I think, and they were these ogres and all that. And we said, man, if we just got rid of them, we could bring freedom to these countries. Let me tell you something. When we freed those dictators, all hell broke loose in those countries, and it destabilized the region so bad that there was a lot more human suffering. There was a lot more because they weren't ready to embrace democracy. And so you had a lot of people, it was almost like Washington, D.C. before the National Guard and all the federal agents came in. It was just a free for all. And people were taken advantage of and hurt and threatened, and you had all these corrupt structures come in. So not that I think sometimes the answer is not taking out Putin, because the person who replaced Putin potentially could be worse, could be a greater maniac in charge of the nuclear arsenal. So it's not always the best in our best interest. And I think that's one of the things we learned when we took Saddam out and other or involved, not necessarily literally killing them or taking them out, but supported the rebellion, lots of times you have unintended consequences and it ends up coming back to bite you.
And the idea that I could have military outside my house right now and arresting me for even talking about assassinating Vladimir Putin should tell you what kind of country we live in and how wonderful it is to live in the United States and be able to speak freely about stuff like that, because in some countries, 100%. You bring that stuff up, you're done. Great stuff, man. Mission Mighty, keep in mind, mission your mind. Come up here next. We'll do Bite by Bite. Till next week, my friend, thank you so much.
Hey, I love it always.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.